Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager bringing you the Heretics Hour on Monday, May 19, 2014. Tonight's show is divided into two parts with two guests, and I've had both of these guests several times before. In this hour, Don from California, and in the second hour, Hanning Scott. So greetings to you, Don.
Greetings, Carolyn. It's wonderful to be back. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, I am very glad to have you here because you've been coming up with some really good ideas, and I wanted you to talk about it on this show. Now, you've been the featured guest three times on either the Heretics Hour or Saturday afternoon before this, and since the last time you were on, you've become Don Advo at Stormfront Radio, co-hosting shows with Don Black. So congratulations to you on that.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that happened?
Well, of course, Stormfront is the biggest pro-white website in the world, mm-hmm. and Don Black has been in the pro-white movement for 45 years, ever since he was a teenager. He's very, very well known. He's a friend and colleague of David Duke. And I think everybody in the white movement knows about Stormfront and posts there and goes there for their daily information. Don Black, about 4 years ago, started an AM radio show in West Palm Beach, Florida. I don't remember the name of the station, but you could pick it up. You could pick it up on your cell phone, or I think online. And I started calling into the show and making comments, and then the show ended about 1 year ago. The station was purchased by an Israeli, and they gave the pink slip to the Don Black Show. So Don started up again in January of this year on the Rents Network, Stormfront Radio. He co-hosts with Roy and with Paul Fromm, the very well-known Canadian free speech activist. The show started up in January. It's on Eastern Standard Time. I think it's between 9 and 11 o'clock, and it goes 2 hours a day. Don Black and Roy are on the first hour, and then on the second hour, I'm an alternate co-host with Paul Fromm. We're on the same day, sometimes we alternate depending on the topics, depending on the sense of urgency or what our plans are, whatever. Some days I'm on as many as 4 days out of the week, others I'm on only two or three, but it's worked out very well for me. It's an enormous amount of fun. We have a very large audience that is growing very steadily. There seems to be a groundswell of pro-white activity out there and pro-white audiences. There are an awful lot of exciting things happening in the pro-white movement. I think the White Man March was very significant and very important. On Stormfront Radio, we supported that. We had on Kyle Hunt. We have many guests on Matt Heimbach, Kevin McDonald. You know, pretty expansive group of people. It's a great chance to work with some of the most important people in the movement.
Okay, all right. Well, I don't want to go on the whole show about that, and you know how I am.
Sure.
But that's very good, and I've heard you on there, and you do a very good job. And of course, all the three times you were on my programs, you're very good speaker, Don, and everybody liked it, and they're very popular. So I'm real glad that that you're spreading your wings there. You have the talent. And tell us about Don Advo. I can kind of guess on how they came up with that, but does that mean white advocate?
Well, I was going to call myself Rush Limbaugh, but that name was already taken, so I picked Don Advo. Yeah, short for advocate, yeah.
Yeah. So you picked that out, huh? I thought they gave that to you.
Well, no. The problem was Don Black's first name is Don. I mean,
yeah.
His real name is Stephen, and I said, why don't we just call you Stephen on the air, and that'll eliminate the confusion. And he didn't want to do that, so I just added ADVO, Advo, to Don, and that seems to work out pretty well. People seem to know the difference between us most of the time, so.
Well, yeah, your voices are very different, but I think that's I listened to a couple of shows, and I thought it was just kind of cute when he'd call you, and he always calls you that, Don Advo. I kind of get a kick out of it. Well, all right, I'm going to list here the shows you were on with me on Saturday afternoon show on September 29th, 2012, in case people want to go check them out. We had a show that I finally titled, I never did care for this title, but Can White Racial Consciousness Prevail? But it was kind of difficult to come up with a title for it, but it was good. And then the second show was on January 5th, 2013 on Saturday afternoon, and that was Sandy Hook Massacre. Was the Sandy Hook Massacre a hoax? And I had a guy from England who believed it was a total hoax. And I was talking to you about it, and you agreed to come on to take the other side, kind of, and you did a good job. So that was that one. And then the third one we both think was the best one, September 23rd, 2013. You were on the Heretics Hour, From Civil War to Civil Rights to White Slavery. And that was when you brought out this idea you have about civil rights equals white slavery, and you've done more work on that. At the time, a lot of people wrote in to me and they said, well, he's really good, you need to bring him back. Was there anything more to read about that? And I told you you should write a book about it, and you said, well, you were working on it, but you still haven't got a book out, but you've done some more work. And so this is what you're going to talk about tonight, isn't that right?
That's right, but there was also a fourth show I did with you, and I talked about Barack Obama. I had read both of his books.
Yeah, I thought I had that one. That was Can White Racial Consciousness Prevail? That's
the
one. That was the September 29th one. Yeah. It's a kind of a funny title, but if they go there, they'll see a picture of Barack Obama.
Well, the first one I did, we talked about the right of freedom of association as central to all the other rights. And I had noted that in the kind of the Orwellian world of the civil rights movement, it's considered to be a badge of slavery on a black person if a white person says, sorry, I don't want to do business with you or associate with you. I thought that was rather strange because the definition of slavery is stripping a person, the enslaved person, of his right of free association. It is not leaving somebody alone and saying, I don't want to deal with you. Certainly black slaves were brought here in violation of their right of freedom of association. As we're reminded, 24 hours a day about what an outrage slavery was. But there was one before that. I talked about freedom of association. Then there was the Obama show.
Well, okay. So you have a better memory than I did. Then I missed that one.
Yeah.
In my checking back. Although I looked, I did a search, but anyway, you can you just go ahead and tell us about that or whatever you want to say about it.
Well, the basic premise of my work, and I think the most recent show was last year, was that The significance of 19th century history in the United States was the abolition of a caste system that involved the enslavement of black people, and the significant event of the 20th century is the establishment of a new caste system, which involves the enslavement of white people by just about everybody else you could think of. And the roots of this enslavement, it's rooted in the Civil War. One of the aspects about the old slavery, pre-Civil War slavery, is that it really was called slavery. They didn't call it something other than slavery. When they passed fugitive slave laws in Congress, they were called fugitive slave laws. They were not called, the Civil Rights Act of 1850. The Civil War wasn't fought so much to liberate slaves as it was fought to enslave free men. The founding principle of the United States was that governments derive their just power from the consent of the governed. The Civil War was fought for the purpose of governing, conquering Southern people and governing them without their consent. It was America's first major war of imperialism. It so tilted the balance of power in this country from the South to the North that Northern commercial and imperialistic power was essentially left unchecked, with a consequence of that we had the Spanish-American War, the purpose of which was to govern people in the Philippines and in Cuba without their consent, and World Wars I and World Wars II, the legacies of which we still live with, and which the German people still live with, since we essentially govern their country by proxy without their consent. More recently, we govern Iraq, Libya, other parts of the world without the consent of the people there. Increasingly, the American people are governed without their consent, as we've seen this tremendous crushing enlargement of federal and state judicial power, whereby the federal courts and even the state courts openly nullify elections. Most recently in the field of gay marriage, when the people in this country vote and express their collective will and the ruling class doesn't like it, the ruling class speaks through its agents on the bench, whether at the federal or the state level, and overturns elections. So, I believe when I first came on your show, and still do believe even more fervently than before, that one of the most devastating blows against white people was stripping white people of our right of freedom of association. What has been erected in this country in the aftermath of the Civil War under the guise of the Civil Rights Movement was the creation of a racial spoils system whereby jobs, civil service jobs, increasingly jobs in the free market, and college admissions are all distributed not so much on the basis of individual achievement, but on the basis of the lobbying and the political efforts of racial pressure groups. Every other race in this Darwinian kind of struggle for racial survival, every other race is very well organized. Every other race is allowed to organize and explicitly work at every single level to advance its own separate and distinct racial interests. You know, the blacks have got the NAACP and the Black Caucus. The Hispanics have got La Raza and the Hispanic Caucus, and the Jews have got the ADL and the SPLC and the World Jewish Congress. I mean, we all know this is very obvious. There's nobody there for white people. I mean, white kids can't even have a white student union without being smeared and threatened with violence. And then white people in this Darwinian kind of racial struggle, everybody else competes on an organized basis. White people, having been stripped of the right to organize and assert our interest, are forced to compete as isolated, largely futile individual people. And the colorblind conservative movement, designed to keep people blind, doesn't help very much either. The attack on freedom of association has historical roots in the Civil War. Ironically enough, the attack on white freedom and the attempt to enslave white people was born in the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery in the United States. The 13th Amendment was ratified in 1865. Amazingly enough, if you look at the states that ratified the 13th Amendment and look at the dates upon which they ratified it, there's something very puzzling and very wrong with it. Turns out the state of Virginia ratified the 13th Amendment abolishing slavery on February 9, 1865. Now, what's wrong with this? Well, the Civil War was still going on. Virginia was where the capital of the Confederate States of America was located. Lee's famous surrender at Appomattox didn't happen until April 9th, 1865, you know, 2 months later. I mean,
can you tell us what the 13th Amendment is?
Yeah, the 13th Amendment abolished slavery. What did it say?
What's the wording of it?
I'll read it just a second. The point I want to make is how does the state wherein is located the capital of the Confederate States of America 2 months before the end of the Civil War ratify the 13th Amendment? How is that even possible? I think the answer is that It was kind of like a rump legislature that was installed by the North. And there was really no election. There was really no democracy. And the 13th Amendment was passed at the point of a gun very quickly and very expeditiously. Interestingly enough, it wasn't ratified in the northern states of Connecticut and New Hampshire until May and July of 1865, maybe because they actually had free speech there and they had some kind of debate. Well, the 13th Amendment, it's basically two sections, very simple, very benign, very innocuous, and it says as follows: neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as punishment for a crime of which a party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States. Okay, that's easy. No more slavery. Mm-hmm. Section 2 says Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Okay, you know, no big deal on that one. But you have to follow the history of how the history of the 13th Amendment, which is extraordinary, as I'm going to illustrate. Well, immediately thereafter, Congress passed what was called the Civil Rights Act of 1866, the first Civil Rights Act in our country's history. And it, too, was fairly benign and fairly neutral on its face. What it did was say all persons within the United States shall have the ability to make and enforce contracts, to sue, to be parties, to give evidence, have the same rights as enjoyed by white citizens. And there was another provision that said all persons had the same right to inherit, purchase, lease, sell, convey, and real property as enjoyed by white citizens. So what this Civil Rights Act did, it didn't elevate anybody to a superior legal power. It simply said that people who were formerly slaves would be on equal footing with white people, and they would have no greater rights. And so over a period, I mean, what's wrong with that? You've got all these, you know, millions of people. I think there were about 4 million slaves in the aftermath of the Civil War. And what's their status? What rights do they have? What duties do white people have toward them? I mean, it would be fairly chaotic, anarchic to just say, you know, these people are turned loose and we don't know what their legal status is. So vesting them with the legal capacity to contract and to appear in lawsuits and to inherit and own property is perfectly benign, and it seems to me perfectly legitimate. The problem is that over a period of time, these racially neutral provisions in the Civil Rights Act of 66 and the 13th Amendment itself kind of morphed into something. It was kind of like a dragonfly that became a dragon, you know. And over a period of time, the courts came in and they said the 13th Amendment authorized Congress to do more than merely dissolve the legal bond by which the Negro slave was held to his master. And this is the important part. Okay, listen very carefully to what I'm about to say. It gave Congress the power rationally to determine what are the badges and incidents of slavery and the authority to translate that determination into effective legislation. Okay, long story short, the badges and the incidents of slavery became whatever Congress said they were. Second of all, the United States Supreme Court embarked on a campaign of lying, of subterfuge, and of Orwellian double talk and obfuscation, whereby they completely misrepresented the provisions of the Civil Rights Act of 1866. There was nothing in the Civil Rights Act of 1866 or in any of the legislative history that prohibited racial discrimination. Absolutely nothing. Yet we hear in the 1968 case, Supreme Court case of Jones versus Alfred Mayer, here you've got a case that says when a white man refuses to sell a black man a house, and this is, you know, 100 years after the end of the Civil War, that violates the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which prohibited racial discrimination, and that imposes upon that black man a badge of slavery. Got that? Slavery no more means you own somebody and you flog him. It means you don't want to sell him your house, you're imposing on him a badge of slavery, notwithstanding that you, the white person, are the person who have been stripped of your right of free association and your right of freedom of contract. So 1968, they're still pulling. They've completely lied about these two civil rights, the Civil Rights Act of 66 and the import of the 13th Amendment. Now, a very important case on the whole concept of the right of free association was decided in 1976. This is a case called Runyon versus McCrary. And this case was based on this was a schools case. And in this case, you had in the state of Virginia a kind of a franchise of whites-only schools. They were exclusively private schools. They got no government support, no government money. The whole Brown versus the Board of Education ruling, which is the subject of a whole other outrage, has no application to these private schools. So, you know, the Negroes come and apply, and they say, "Sorry, we're not integrated, and we won't let you in." So they file a lawsuit in the local federal court saying we're the victims of discrimination. Well, two things. First of all, there was a 1958 decision called NAACP versus Alabama, and this is a case which is considered by many constitutional scholars to be the case wherein the so-called right of free association was established by the Supreme Court. Now, you'll notice neither the First Amendment nor any of the other amendments to the Bill of Rights have the term freedom of association. The term freedom of association has been held to be an implied right in connection with the furtherance of First Amendment rights. So if you're talking about an association with respect to communicating or advocating some value or practicing a religion, you have an implied right of free association, but it doesn't apply to non-expressional associations. Does not apply to concerted action that lacks an expressive purpose. So the heretofore implied right of free association was actually rather limited. Well, in the NAACP case, the state of Alabama suspected that the NAACP was illegally operating as an unregistered foreign corporation in the state of Alabama, and they issued a subpoena to make the NAACP provide membership lists. The NAACP ran to the federal courts, and the federal courts did what they do as a matter of course. They created a new constitutional right out of thin air, the right of freedom of association, and they said that if the state of Alabama is allowed to poke its nose into the private affairs and look at the membership list, this will violate the right of freedom of association because it will place an undue burden on this organization, on these people. Interesting thing in NAACP versus Alabama, it expressly says the purpose of the NAACP is to advance Negro interests. Now, that's what the Supreme Court decision says, Negro. So if I lapse into Negro, it's not because I'm a racist and I want to insult people. It's merely because up until very recently, that was an entirely respectable word, and it appears in all of the jurisprudence.
Well, what was that word? I didn't get it quite. It wasn't Negro, it was what?
A Negro interest.
Negro.
NAACP versus Alabama said the purpose of the NAACP was to advance Negro interests.
Oh, okay. I see. You're saying you're not saying you're picking out that word, Negro. Okay.
Well, that was what they said, Negro interests.
Right, right.
And they had a quotation from the NAACP state incorporating documents from New York. Used the C word, not that C word. It said the purpose was to advance interest of people of color.
Yeah.
Okay. So
okay.
Here these people in these private schools get sued.
Mm-hmm.
And this is 1976, 20 years later, and they say, wait, we have something here called freedom of association in the NAACP versus that. We have a right to advance white interests in having our white school. And the Supreme Court says basically, you know, get out of here. That was for black people, and you're white. What makes you think you have any rights? So they invoked the old civil – but in addition to that, the basis of their decision – see, they basically said the right of free association for blacks – doesn't apply for whites. You're white. Shut up. That defense doesn't apply. The basis of the decision in saying that racial discrimination in private schools was the old Civil Rights Act of 1866, which it says, quote unquote, prohibits racial discrimination in the making and enforcing of private contracts. Well, of course, it said nothing of the sort. There are a half a dozen Supreme Court cases, notwithstanding that fact, that lie and make the statement that it does. Well, interesting thing in the Runyon case, Justice Byron White wrote a very interesting dissent, about 20 pages, and he says, he looks at the Civil Rights Act of 66, and he says, on its face, the statutes give all persons the same right to make contracts as enjoyed by white citizens. Whites had, at the time when first enacted, and have today, no right to make a contract with an unwilling private person, no matter what that person's motivation for refusing to contract. Indeed, it is, and has always been central to the very concept of a contract, that there had to be assent by the parties who formed the contract. The right to make contract enjoyed by white citizens was therefore always a right to enter into binding agreements only with willing second parties. And so what you have is he calls the other justices on this and says, this is not what the statute says. There is nothing in the legislative history. There is nothing in the congressional debates that says the Civil Rights Act of 66 prohibits racial discrimination in the making and enforcing of private contracts. Okay, you can read it for yourself. I've read it for myself. It's not there. But in this weird Orwellian world we live in, they simply lie. And once there's one Supreme Court decision that holds for a proposition, you know, all the decisions thereafter cite that, notwithstanding that it's a completely fraudulent representation of the underlying law and the underlying legislative history. So we can't have schools, we can't have our own neighborhoods, we can't have anything, and the single most destructive blow, in my view, is to destroy the right of white people to exercise the right of freedom of association that is openly and explicitly exercised by every other racial and ethnic group.
Well, yeah, you make a very powerful case there. You said something, and I didn't write it down, and now I don't remember what it was, but you said something in the course of that I thought was really, really important to remember. But it had to do with the fact that whites don't get the right. These laws don't seem to apply to us, or these amendments or whatever, however they describe them, or these court rulings. They apply for blacks. You did say that, well, this is for blacks, it's not for you guys, whites. But that's,
well, they didn't say that in so many words.
No,
They didn't quite say that. But that's what it really meant. Okay, this doesn't apply to white people. What are you talking about? Okay, mm-hmm. I strongly recommend any serious person out there who's interested in this should read Runyon versus McCrary, 427 U.S. 160. You can Google it, get it online, download it, read it for free. It's about 30 pages, but it is well worth reading. And if you want to see the fraud they have practiced on us for 150 years, and read Justice Byron White's wonderful dissent, his analysis of the history of it, the plain language of the statute, and the manner in which court after court has misrepresented the plain language of the statute. And the courts get up here and lie. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You know, kick them out in the next election? They're appointed for life. They can tell any lies they want. And, you know, some guy writes a dissent and calls them on it. Big deal. Whoever reads this, who reads this stuff anyway, except, you know, dorks like me, okay? So,
you know, lawyers.
Nah, most lawyers don't know that thing exists. They do what they have to do to make a living, and they're on their way. Okay, which brings us to the present time. Or do we have a break that's going to come on or something?
No,
the music's
just
gonna start?
Keep going. We're going until 9 o'clock or 7 o'clock your time, I guess.
All right, so I got 32 minutes left. Okay.
Right.
Okay, which. You know, this is essentially the same analysis that I promulgated on your show back in, I think, of August or September of last year, mm-hmm. Only I've gotten very deeply into the research. And you can see with all the lying and all the misrepresentation that you really have to go back and read every single thing, because these people very simply lie. Like in Runyon versus McCrary, they'll say, you know, the Civil Rights Act of 66 prohibits racial discrimination in the making and enforcement of contracts. So unless you go back and read this stuff or you read Byron Smith's dissent, you really have to be a detective and you really have to ferret stuff out. Figuring out the truth of American history since the Civil War and these issues, it's almost like figuring out the Holocaust. You have to go to the site where the building is and chip off some of it and have it chemically analyzed, because you're never going to know the truth otherwise.
Yeah, well, let me say here that's I really like hearing you talk like that, because lying is what I'm going after all the time. And that, what can you do about people who lie if nobody cares whether they're lying, or if the people who should be bringing that to everybody's attention and just publicizing it to embarrass them, don't do it. And so these lies build upon lies, and it is like the same thing as with the Holocaust and other things which are all built on lies.
Is there anything I need to clarify? Because I know some of this is kind of technical and legalese type stuff. And
well, I don't know, but I did say that in the second half hour, you know, the first part, people could call in. So let me give the call-in number. If they have any questions, they can ask them. The call-in number tonight is, guest call-in. All right. 323-642-1206. I think it's always the same number for this show. 323-642-1206.
Okay, what I have just said is basically a lead-in to the most important part of your show.
Okay.
Okay, on May 15th, I promulgated on the Stormfront Radio my proposed constitutional amendment to restore first-class citizenship to white people. And the amendment is as follows. I know it's kind of wordy and it sounds complicated, but it's really very simple, and I'll read it slowly. The right of freedom of association, however and by whomever exercised on the basis of race, color, religion, national origin, ethnicity, gender, age, sexual orientation, or physical or mental disability, whether real or perceived, whether exercised individually or otherwise, contractually or otherwise, in commerce or otherwise, by persons over the age of 18, is absolute and shall not be regulated or abridged. Period. The effect of this amendment is to establish an explicit, absolute, standalone constitutional right of freedom of association, which is absolute insofar as it involves the exercise of that freedom based on race or any of these other protected categories. If this amendment were in place, a white person would be able to sell his house to anybody he wanted to sell it to. A white private school would be able to limit its student body to white children.
Mm-hmm.
And
that would be great.
That would be completely beyond the reach of the governments. And that I believe would really strike an important blow for reinstating first class citizenship for white people. No more would the minorities be able to sue us for racial discrimination or any of that stuff. This amendment, if ratified, would wipe out virtually every single civil rights law in this country, both at the federal level and the state level. Every single civil rights law that has any kind of prohibition on racial discrimination, it's gone. The Civil Rights Act of 64, the Fair Housing Act of 68, the Civil Rights Act of 57, the Civil Rights Act of 1857, all of them, they're gone. They go up in a puff of smoke. They don't exist anymore in this huge industry that exists on the basis that exists because of this. They're gone too, and no more will white people be harassed and intimidated and terrorized by these oppressive, tyrannical laws which are designed to strip us of our rights of free association and free speech and our dignity as human beings.
Well, what about, Don Black ever put that amendment up at the top of the Stormfront page or radio page or something like that? There was discussion of that when I listened the first time you brought it up.
No, I don't think it's been put up there yet. It hasn't been put up there yet. We're going to be, I guess, probably talking about that. Don is very positive about the amendment. He was talking about it today. He brought it up and read it on the air, and he's very enthusiastic
about
it.
But is there, so there's no place for anybody to go and read it at the moment?
You know, that's a good point. What they can do is go to Stormfront and click on archives of previous shows, and the text of the amendment is set forth on the show summary.
Yeah, of that one particular show.
Yeah.
Why don't you read that again? Maybe you can leave out some of the additional things, but read the basic wording of that, of your amendment again.
Okay, the right of freedom of association, however and by whomever exercised, on the basis of race, et cetera, whether exercised individually or otherwise, contractually or otherwise, in commerce or otherwise, is absolute and shall not be regulated or abridged.
What would they use to say, oh, we couldn't possibly do anything like that? What would be their main argument against it?
Well, their main argument against it is you're trying to bring back slavery and Jim Crow and you know, that the usual shrill...
See, again, that's like, we're going to take care of these Negroes, but we're not going to take care of you. See, because their rights, it seems to me, I could put it this way, that the rights of minorities, and we're particularly talking about blacks now or whatever you want to call them, depend on us not having, white people not having their rights.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I probably heard you say that.
Yeah, their whole strategy is to strip us of every single right and freedom that we have. They can.
Yeah, but
us.
Even so, for them to have their rights, they have to have their rights based on taking away our rights. I mean,
well,
according to your amendment, we can all have these same rights. But no, it doesn't work that way because that's not good enough for them because they'll fall behind. So they can't. They need some kind of special rights, which means that we can't have our rights. Like, they have to, let's talk about education. Black children have to be educated in the same classrooms with white children.
Well, okay, understand, this amendment has nothing to do with the public schools. This amendment doesn't tackle Brown versus the Board of Education or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
This only deals with private conduct. And the way I've drafted it, first of all, it's extremely, extremely broad. The right of free association, however and by whomever exercised. And it says whether exercised individually or otherwise. That means if you're exercising it as an individual person or if you form a partnership or you form a church or a corporation or whatever, corporations, churches, unincorporated associations all have the same civil right, very much like freedom of speech. Second thing, it says contractually or otherwise. Okay, that means contractual relationships and every other relationship. Contractually is the way they've really attacked us by stripping of our rights of contractual freedom. So it's drafted very broadly in that regard to give the maximum amount of protection. Third, it says in commerce or otherwise. Now, they've used the Commerce Clause to take away a lot of freedom and regulate a lot of conduct. And what this says is the right of freedom of association, even if exercised in commerce, is absolute and shall not be regulated or infringed. So I think I've covered every base. Also, I would add a provision that said no court of law or equity shall have subject matter jurisdiction to rule on the constitutionality of this amendment. So you take it away from the courts.
Is that usually done, or is that some new kind of a...
No, there's other people that have talked about it. Congress can limit the jurisdiction of the federal courts, and I would put that in there. I got that idea from some other people, but no, I would put that in there. And, I mean, you say, what are they going to do? I mean, the first obstacle, it would be getting this thing ratified. And, of course, I think that would cost gazillions of dollars, and I don't think that's really very realistic. But I think in the event that the country breaks up and you have racially based regions, I think it may have great value in terms of regional, new regional countries, new regional sovereign nations adopted. Moreover, merely proposing this, merely getting this out into the marketplace of ideas and into the public discourse is going to change the way people think. I've never heard anybody express it quite this way, that the attack on the right of freedom of association is essentially the most devastating blow they have ever dealt against us. And if you just reinstate that right, look at all the civil rights laws you wipe out. Mm-hmm. One stroke of the pen, all these anti-discrimination laws are gone. Okay, you take sexual orientation, disabilities, you get rid of the disabilities laws, so these horrible wheelchair people can't roll around and sue people because the mirror in the bathroom was 2 inches too high off the ground or something. You know, that's an industry out here. You got these crooks. But yet, before you solve any problem, you have to analyze the problem and figure it out the shortest, most direct way to attack it. And with all due modesty and humility, I think this is it.
Well, great. Now, I had a thought today, and I want to share it with you and the listeners, that not only can this do what you're talking about it doing, set us up for new kinds of groups that we might secede in or whatever, but I think it's an excellent way to approach the problems of white people to the white people in general, rather than using race and saying, well, we want to be racially separate, we want to have our own groups together and so on. But this would be a way to do it by saying white people are not having the same rights in a very distinct and clear way that non-white people are having, and that not, to me, would this be true that non-white people, in order for them to have the rights that they've been given in this country, it means that the rights of white people have to be eliminated or reduced in order to cause that to happen? And well, do you think? Now, I'm not saying this very well. I had it better earlier.
Okay, let me make a point that I think needs to be made. First of all, okay. this amendment doesn't mention white people or black people or any other people. It says the right of freedom of association.
Yeah,
now, I'll tell
right.
you something else. Don Black said something very interesting today when he was talking about the new amendment. He says he thinks basically everybody, most people, would agree with it. And most people would sign on. And I'll tell you something else. Orwellianism works both ways. I think if you stuck this in front of a bunch of people and had them read it, they'd sign on. Very few people have any critical thinking skills. You know, freedom of association, race, color, religion, blah, blah, is absolute. They see rights. They say shall not be regulated or abridged. Yeah, I'll sign on for that. Sounds good to me. And
people are not bright. I realized, I just remembered what I was thinking of, that to tell people it's about freedom, that not so much about rights, it's about freedom rather than race. That's the thing. And
exactly.
That how could,
well, you're absolutely
like
right.
You said, who could be against it?
Well,
and
you're
if
absolutely you
talked
right.
about this to white people and showed them, could give a little argument saying that, you know, this we don't have the freedom we should have because of this lack of freedom of association, explained about it, bypassing the whole idea these other races are cheating us and so on, that it might really convince quite a lot of white people.
Well, I think it would. I think, you know, the argument you can make is we need an express right of freedom of association because the implied right of freedom of association only applies to the First Amendment. Why shouldn't we have a standalone? Why shouldn't all associations be given the same dignity? Why shouldn't we expand freedom to all associations and not just those limited to the First Amendment? I mean, you can make all kinds of really great arguments for this. They're race neutral, and I think a lot of these dull-witted people would go along with it simply because it sounds so good. You know, freedom shall not be abridged, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean,
well, they might also, some not-so-dull people might also catch on and say, yes, I can see how my rights are being abridged in order for other people to have their rights, and that shouldn't be that way.
Well, I think a lot of white young people are going to start getting on board when they can't find jobs and they can't get good college admissions, and they see that your admission to college is determined up in the legislature by the Hispanic caucus and the Black caucus and the LGBT HIV lobby and all these goofball groups that have acquired all this power, and plain normal people have been completely excluded from the process. So That's kind of the status of it. I guess we need to get it up somewhere so people can read it. It'd be kind of weird to promulgate a good idea and nobody be able to find it.
Well, I'll it's kind of long for me to put in the program.
It's one sentence.
Blog. Yeah, but then usually I'm talking about the program. But anyway, I'll link to it if you've got it there. I've already linked to the archive page, and people can find it there if they just scroll down just a little bit.
Yeah, there's a typo in it where it says natural origin. It should say national origin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens when I type my own show summaries, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it happens. Well, I think there's just an awful lot of possibilities with this. You know, I got interested in this freedom of association after I was hearing about it from you and did a few other shows on it. But it's hard to, when you're dealing with these legal issues and courts and so on, it's hard for people to do much about it. But I think the talk to people along these lines about, I don't care, no matter what you say, it comes across to me as, it still comes across the same way that my rights and freedoms have been abridged and limited in order for non-whites who are not, aren't the founding race of this country. Well, I got to stay away from that talk, I guess.
The civil rights regime stripped white people of their rights of freedom of association, freedom of contract, and ultimately freedom of speech. That simple. One sentence. Three parts.
So, now the argument against it would be, well, if you take away all the civil rights regulations, white people are going to be totally unfair to non-white people.
Yeah, they're going to bring back slavery and Jim Crow and lynching.
Of course, we wouldn't do that. That's not going to happen.
Well, no, nobody wants to do that. There is one problem with this. You understand, once you pass this amendment, this prohibits any ban on miscegenation. You can't tell people who they marry.
Well, yeah, but how many of those do we have anyway? Or if there's a few states somewhere that have that on the books, they don't enforce it.
Well, it's unenforceable, but that's kind of an interesting. That some people may raise that issue, but
you mentioned that. I can't imagine that's too because people, you can't pass a law about that anymore.
Yeah, Don Black kind of blew it off, and he said we're in a new reality now. That doesn't make difference for anybody. There'll be some diehards, but they're probably in their 90s by now.
The criticism I had was that I thought that 18-year-olds should not be given legal freedom of association because maybe their parents can still exercise control over them as to who they associate with. And they would have the law on their side.
Okay, that's a separate issue. I don't want to get into a battle over whether it should be 18 or 21. I mean, it's hard enough to make this thing acceptable to people. Mm-hmm. I don't want to fight over 18 or 21 or anything like that. I mean, I'm considering removing the age provision anyway, just not to have it there, just to shorten it down a little bit.
Well, then it would apply to everybody, children and everything.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, children don't have any rights anyway. I mean, they're subject to their parents' supervision, and they don't
not necessarily. The government wants to make them more and more subject to them. Therefore, subject to the government. Therefore, this could be a problem. Therefore, the government could say, well, all these five-year-olds in kindergarten can go and go here and go there and go somewhere else and visit these places, and the parents don't have anything to say about it.
This limit government power. The government can still do that. This only limits private power, or it limits the government to regulate private control. If they still, want to...
Yeah, but this kind of takes away, this would take away the supervision of children, really, legally, away from the parents and put it into, limbo or something. So that's the only thing that I would say, that you have to you have to make, put an age limit on it. And probably should be 21.
I put it in there because I didn't want to be open to the ability that they would try to bring back child labor and say that a contractual relationship between a 10-year-old and a corporation was beyond the ability of the government to regulate it. I didn't want that in there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. I think 18's probably okay. I don't know if anybody's going to oppose it on that grounds. The minorities are going to yell and scream.
Because, I would, Don. I do. I do oppose it on those grounds. See if anybody else does. Okay. So what have you left out? What do you need to say in the next 10 minutes?
We don't have any callers, huh?
Well, no, and sometimes I wonder, I was going to ask somebody especially to call in. Now, I'm going to ask right now for one of my regular listeners, if they don't mind, calling in just so I can see if this call-in board thing is working, because I never see a caller on it, and it has to light up so I can answer it. So maybe somebody will. Well, anyway, but we don't have any now, so you go on and kind of figure what callers might ask and respond to that.
Well, yeah, you never know. It's the whole area of this whole civil rights area. It just, the more I dig into it and the more I read it, just more and more lies and deception and. These civil rights, these judges, these Supreme Court judges, they're absolutely corrupt and disgusting. And, you know, the only thing they'll do is write a dissent and stick it in the back of an opinion that nobody's ever going to read except, you know, some obscure person like me. And the colorblind conservative crowd has really sold us out. They should be screaming at the top of their lungs about some of this stuff, but you don't hear them saying anything.
Well, have you introduced this to a Council of Conservative Citizens, or
No, I have. You know, that's a funny thing. I sent this stuff out by email to quite a few people and several prominent lawyers in our movement who are openly in our movement, and a lot of other people. The only person that ever responded to me was you, and you had me on your show, and. And then I brought it up spontaneously on Stormfront Radio, and just, you know, brought it up one day, and people seemed to like it. We had a Canadian free speech activist on today, and he kind of had an interesting take. He sounded like it was. He said he thought it sounded tongue in cheek, and that it would never have a chance of succeeding.
Well, I think that's the first thing people think, and the people listening are no doubt thinking that. Well, we've tried all those things. Those things don't work. You can't get anywhere with stuff like that. But just like you say, just bringing it up and getting people talking about it is a good thing.
Well, if you take the position that nothing is going to work, mm-hmm. That's the same thing as telling people to do nothing.
I know, but that's what they do. That's their first thought.
To do nothing, but I think it is important that people learn how to analyze this issue and how to realize, you know, you pass this amendment, all these civil rights laws disappear. They're gone. I mean, it's like, what other single thing can you think of that would so completely alter, that would so completely emancipate white people? I mean, it would sure be a long, hard, expensive battle, and I don't know that it could ever be really ratified, but I'll tell you what would happen is you're going to get a lot of pissed off white people out there that are getting angry and they're becoming active, and you can wrap your head around this and really argue this. You know, you it's an easy thing to argue.
Mm-hmm.
You just make the argument, we want equal rights for whites, equal rights of freedom of association, and if you're going to deny us the same rights you have, you're a racist. You're a horrible racist.
Well, I don't like the phrase equal rights for whites, but I do like the idea of freedom of association for everyone.
What other argument are you going to make?
Well, freedom of association for everyone, and you can't tell me what I can do.
That is within the concept of equal rights for whites. This thing is racially neutral. There's nothing in here. that gives any race a leg up on any of the other races.
Mm-hmm. Right, and then you can see what the natural superior. No, I shouldn't say it that way. How should I say it? The natural advance that individuals make on their own merit, not because they're being
But I'll tell you what's going to happen when white people have the ability to organize and they compete as organized players in this Darwinian racial spoils system, you're going to see things turn around pretty quickly.
Well, what would you suggest people do? Can you suggest something? You already did. You said you thought they should study this and think critically about it, and they should read Runyon versus McCrary.
Yeah,
but
that's important.
What would be the best way to talk about this?
Well, I guess the best thing I can do is get it posted somewhere where they can link to it and find it. Mm-hmm. Boy, that's – I really feel like a really that's a serious oversight. Mm-hmm. When they can't even link to it. Yeah, first of all, understand it. Just understand the concept. Understand that this is going to reestablish first class citizenship for white people.
Okay, and then along with everybody else would have first class citizenship, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it would level the playing field.
Yeah, level the playing field. That's right. The whole concept has been that there can't be a level playing field because that is not level, it's not fair, that non-whites need protection and advantages. That's
right.
The whole, that thing that we have. I always forget what it's called. Two words. You know what I'm talking about.
Affirmative action.
Affirmative action, yeah.
Right.
It's time for that to go. But they'll say, we have to have that because it still hasn't worked yet.
Yeah. This would eliminate affirmative action in private hiring. It wouldn't eliminate affirmative action in the colleges, certainly not the public colleges and all the government.
Why wouldn't this affect schooling? I don't quite understand that because it's contractual. You say?
Well, because it deals with private conduct. The schools are government.
So it wouldn't affect anything to do with the government?
It would affect the ability of the government to get involved in private affairs, private associations. Like in Runyon, where you had all these private schools who discriminated against blacks and limited their enrollment to white people. The government would not be able to get in there. Because like they said in Runyon, they said there's no the badges of slavery, get out of here. I'm so sick of that. There was one statement that they made that said I forget, they said there's no right to freedom of association in the abstract, and the Constitution does not the Constitution places no value on discrimination, and while invidious private discrimination may be characterized as a form of exercising freedom of association protected by the First Amendment, it has never been accorded affirmative constitutional protections. This amendment will give discrimination an affirmative constitutional protection. It will establish a right of freedom of association in the abstract, a standalone right, express absolute right of freedom of association.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
That's. But that's. I'm not sure exactly where we're going with it. I mean, I haven't. Don was talking today about getting funding. He mentioned the subject on Stormfront Radio. So he's really thought a lot about it. I can tell he made a point of reading it on the air and talking about it with Canadian guests, and they poo-pooed it. They didn't understand it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Same old thing. Everybody says, well, nothing you can do is going to work, so don't do anything. And I say, we got to seize the moment. You got to start somewhere. You really do. And the problem is that we're dealing with a national problem. And I mean, unless the country breaks up into parts, you're going to have to deal with it at a national level. The Supreme Court has just, on its own initiative, simply seized power over the last 150 years since the Civil War. Civil War was a hugely corrupt war. It's the corruption and the tyranny that was implicit in that war has never been fully understood.
Who do you put mainly at fault for that? Who's behind that?
Well, you got the corporate financial elites in the North. I mean, it was the North that prosecuted the war, invaded the South. The South had no plan to conquer the North, to go North. The South simply wanted to separate. And if you accept the premise of the Declaration of Independence, the South had as much right to separate from the Union as the 13 colonies had to separate from the British Empire. The whole premise was governments derived their power from the consent of the governed, and if you don't have our consent anymore. Moreover, in 1852, Lincoln drafted a resolution that said it is the right of all people sufficiently numerous to establish their own country and to throw off an old regime. Lincoln actually formulated a defense of secession in 1852.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he became elected president, and then somebody got to him because he completely transformed. He completely changed his tune on many issues.
He did. That's all very interesting. Well, there's so much that can be gone into. Don, I'm going to have to say goodbye to you now. And you know what? I want to thank you for coming on and telling us about all this, and we will do it again soon. But you know what? I knew how to get you to include you in the conversation, but now I realize I don't know how to take you off the conversation without – I don't want to hang up the call, because then I'll hang up my call with Blog Talk. But I think if you just go get off your Skype, huh?
Okay, we'll try that.
All right, I hope.
Get off
but
my
thanks very much. And well, there you go. He's gone, and Blog Talk's still here. Well, that worked wonderful. Thanks to Don. I really like Don. He's a good guy, and he did a great job here. He's always working hard for us. So here he's sending me a message. Yes, I'll say to him. He asked me, am I off? Yes. He can't hear it now. So here we are, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Heretics Hour, and we are continuing for another hour. And I am going to be bringing on Hadding Scott in about 10 minutes or so. First, I have some little bit of something I want to say, and I'm not going to play any break music because I don't want to use up the time. So I never have enough time, do I? So what I'm going to talk about here is not what I intended to say. I was going to say some other things. But just today, something came up, and I do want to make it clear that Hadding has nothing to do with what I'm going to say right now. And that's why I'm not going to bring him on until I'm finished, because I don't want any of this to rub off on him, as he is a neutral person, and he's not a party to it, and he doesn't even know what I'm going to be saying here. So I just told him I'd probably be 10 minutes before I brought him on, and he's there and available. So, but today I discovered that, and here I go back into this topic, which I don't like to have to get into, but there's something new has come up, and I thought I would just mention it, because it really took hold of me this afternoon when I saw it, or late this morning. And I did send an email to Tan Stoffel this afternoon asking him to remove my programs from his new blog site where I finally decided to take a look at that a little more closely, and I discovered that he has some of my Heretics Hour programs posted there in his archives, along with the MP3s, and you can listen to them. And I object to that, so I wrote and told him that. Now, there's some interesting sidelights to this. What he has done this, and he didn't get my consent to post my shows on there, but they're the ones that he participated in. he was a guest on those particular programs, and so he just, since he has access, you see, to all of that on his archive, at his archive site, he can just take what he wants and use it wherever he wants, when he wants. And so he's done that without letting me know he was going to do it. Now, to understand what I'm going to say here, you need to understand that the White Network is dissolved. Tan dissolved it when he locked me out and shut it down and announced it was the end. Remember the end? This is the end. No more. This site is frozen as of now. That was April 15th. And then I dissolved the White Network further when I shut down the server, which maintained it, which took it totally offline. And so Tan brought back the backup, you know. So you always have a backup. So that's what he brought back. So Tan is not the proprietor of the White Network, but he's only in control of this entity he's created called the White Network -archive.com. And he kind of pretends it's still the White Network, but it's not. If you go to the White Network, you'll go to CarolynJaeger.net because I own the WhiteNetwork.com domain name. So, but on this archive.com site, he has no legal right to display or make available my programs and my blog posts and articles if I refuse my permission for him to use them, which I have done so, and he did redact them. Of course, by redacting them, they're still there. They're just not visible to anyone, but he still has them. I don't know what I can do about that, and I am really not interested in making a big lawsuit out of any of this. Is just not worth it. And loss, you know, when you get involved in law, you never know what's going to happen, and it could just be disastrous for everybody involved. So that's really not an option. But I do go to the court of public opinion, and so I want to say that by posting my programs without my permission on his blog, he has disregarded the policy that he originally agreed to, because we had it posted on the White Network front page under policy, and it said that the content of the White Network, the content on the White Network was the sole property of the program host and or writer who produced this, the property and the White Network. But I noticed when I had already copied that down, but I copied it down again, the wording of it, and I noticed then, finally, that he had changed it. See, he had changed the whitenetwork.com to the whitenetworkarchive.com, which means that after announcing on April 15th that the entire site was frozen from that moment onward, and he was not going to, you know, do anything to it. It was going to, here it was as it appeared on this date, at this time that he called the end. He hypocritically, and I want to emphasize hypocritically, makes changes to benefit himself. And he changed this URL here, thinking afterwards he made other changes. First, he added a long explanation called Why This Archive, which is only his side of the story and is very long, and to which he adds things whenever he wants to. You know, it's totally self-serving. And that was not there when he froze the site, supposedly, after his final program. Second, he's changed all the URLs to the -archive URL. And so he's gone in and done that. And the third thing he's done is to change this policy, content policy at the bottom of the front page, which to me is a fraudulent thing to do because it makes a legal change so that it says, and I don't think it's legal, but it says that the content belongs to the White Network and the URL is the whitenetwork.archive.com, where originally it was just thewhitenetwork.com. So you see, he can't have what he considers ownership of it unless he's changed that. So he did change it. Now, I just have to say that this is a fraudulent thing to do, and it's not something a real white man would do, but only a crook would do, because everything he's been doing is like a crook, and it's like a Jew. It's like a Jew. And, you know, we just have to say, I have to say, he's been living with a woman who's half Jewish for like maybe 20 years, and he's got his children, therefore, are part Jewish. Now, I'm not saying that they follow any kind of Jewish practices, but they still are, and it seems like Tan has picked up a whole lot of Jewishness in himself, because everything that he's done in these last couple of months has been totally something I would never have expected of him. And it seems like he just let that all come out in himself. And it all reduces itself in the long run to very little. I agree. Some people will think it's not worth me talking about. But what is important for the long run is that whether we allow Jews to continue to double-cross and steal from Germans. That's what it boils down to, ladies and gentlemen. And don't scoff it off. The scoffers will be held accountable when they meet up with National Socialists, both in this world and the world to come. If you think you're a National Socialist, if you think you stand up for the good things that white people do, if you think that you can stand up for that, among white people we make agreements and we stand by our agreements and we don't double-cross each other behind one another's back. And all kinds of white people have been going along with that and saying, oh, he must have had good reasons for doing that. Well, how long do we stand aside and watch Jews steal the property of Germans? And I won't even say the last part. And let me put it this way. The hypocrisy is breathtaking. After Tan Stoffel has said publicly from April 15th onward, now this is the most important part of all, that he wants nothing more to do with me. He even said he's sorry he ever got involved with me, yet he hypocritically now wants all my programs in which he participated as a guest published on his new blog site. So he is dragging me along with him in his new ventures. He wants nothing to do with me. I'm a terrible person, but he's dragging me along with him in his new ventures. Why? Because he's on those shows and he wants every damn word he ever spoke, obviously, to appear, to have it in his archives, because now somehow they've all become so important to him to show his great contribution that he's made in these past 2 years. Well, I just say that's the style of the Jew, ladies and gentlemen, and we all recognize it, and we need to understand how to stand up against that. And so I just put this into the court of public opinion, and I've also written to him and told him where I think that what he's done is not acceptable, and he needs to remove those programs of mine from his site. I don't have any of his programs. I don't want any of his programs. All right, I want to tell you that I'm doing I've been thinking about a new series of articles and programs, which I am going to start doing, and I'll probably do them on a separate day than on Monday, and not on the Heretics Hour. But I have a title for it, Traitors and Misfits. So I've been studying about traitors. So that's that takes care of that. And on Saturday, I think I'm going to have a Saturday afternoon show for the first time since I've been on Blog Talk. So I hope you watch for that. I have a guest for that. Now, let's see. I've got to go find Hattie. Here he is, and I have to add him to the call. And here he is. Hi, Hattie. Are you here yet? You hear me? Get your sound on. Well, he's on, but he may have walked away from the computer. There, I hear him now.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi there.
Yep. Hello.
Yes, you hear me?
Yeah, this is padding.
Yes, okay. Get yourself adjusted there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I had to have my little
Do I sound okay?
You sound fine. You sound great.
Yeah.
All right. Nice to hear your voice
good.
over the Skype, just like old times. So you're going to talk about a really sensitive subject tonight, and just to introduce it for a moment myself, and then I'm going to let you go with it, is that I haven't said a word about Frazier Glenn Miller since that terrible event took place, and I was so totally shocked and amazed, and I just couldn't even, I had nothing to say about it because I knew nothing about it, and I couldn't explain anything, but I want to say that for my own part, while I didn't know Glenn Miller well, I certainly knew him better than a whole lot of people who are talking about him and think they know exactly what he's all about, because I had him on my program three times, and he was always a featured guest. Twice he was with another person. They were both featured, but once he was by himself. And so therefore, I talked to him on the phone a few times because of that. And I emailed with him somewhat, and even afterwards I got a few emails from him later on, and I always liked him. I think anybody listening to those programs could tell that. And I just cannot believe for myself that he was a lifelong agent, federal agent, or, you know, actually working in a mole or something in the white nationalist movement. That just is not real to me. So that's just where I stand on it. But I haven't wanted to say anything because I don't know other than that. You know, I don't know why he would do such a horrendous, stupid thing. So what have you been doing about it?
Well, you're mixing two different things there. You're talking about the shooting incident. I guess that's what you mean by the horrendous, stupid thing?
Yes.
And
yeah.
And then you're talking about this claim that he was always a mole or something, which are two different claims.
True.
Yeah, I don't believe that Frazier Glenn Miller was a mole. This is a theory that that some people have found it gratifying to put out for reasons of their own. But you know, the thing that they overlook, or maybe they're misinformed about it, is that the federal government got nothing but embarrassment and humiliation from their dealings with Frazier Glenn Miller. Nobody was convicted on his testimony ever of anything. And after this shooting incident, they've really got egg on their faces. This is what motivated, I believe, the former federal prosecutor Doug McCullough to give interviews, because he wanted to cover his tracks, because he made that deal with Frazier Glenn Miller back in, I don't know, 1987, 88, that allowed him to get out of prison in 3 years instead of dying in prison. And he made that deal with them, but Frazier Glenn Miller, if you study him a little bit, he's a very wily character. And he managed to get what he wanted out of them without them getting really anything. You know, one thing that they did get out of the deal with him is they managed to ruin his reputation. I believe that was part of their goal, because in the interview that McCullough gave with WTVD 11, which is that's the one that's really the seed of the whole transvestite prostitute accusation. All right. In that interview, McCullough mentions that part of their goal was to remove Frazier Glenn Miller from the White Patriot Party so that it would die. They were very concerned about the White Patriot Party. If you look at some of the old videos from the early 80s of the White Patriot Party, you can understand why they wanted to destroy it and to get him out of that picture, because
Having, did you explain who McCullough is yet? Because
Doug McCullough
about this, but I don't know if people know the background of it all.
I believe I mentioned he was Doug McCulloch was a federal prosecutor in the Fort Smith sedition trials. Well, the Fort Smith mass sedition trial, which ended in 1988, where there were 13 defendants, and every single one was acquitted. Frazier Glenn Miller agreed to testify in that trial, but nobody was convicted of anything. He then testified in another trial where I believe McCulloch was also prosecuting, which was the Shelby 3 adult bookstore case, where Glenn Miller's two accomplices, when he went underground, who were not members of his White Patriot Party, but posse comitatus. Their names were Robert Eugene Jackson and Douglas Sheets. His two accomplices were accused of that crime, not only on information from Frazier Glenn Miller. I was just reading on Raw Story, there were three other men that the feds had gotten to testify that Jackson and Sheets had done this crime. And all of these men were offered leniency on their terms, and some of them got cash from the government for saying these things. One guy got $5,000 for his testimony, right? So this is how the government gets people to testify in these things. They give them a chance to not spend their entire life in prison, and they give them cash. But according to Raw Story, they quoting one of the defense attorneys from the Shelby 3 adult bookstore trial, Glenn Miller said to them, to the defendants, I guess to Sheets, Douglas Sheets and his attorney, he said, look, I'm going to be pointing the finger at you, but you're not going to be convicted because it's all hearsay. This was very calculated on Miller's part. He got himself out of this horrible jam, which according to stories at the time, he was facing 100 years in prison, which means he would have never come out. And he got himself out of it by pretending to work for the government, but giving them effectively nothing except egg on their face. And Leonard Zeskind, the Jew anti-white writer and activist, has complained bitterly that Frazier Glenn Miller never had any intention of being a good witness, and that he should have died in prison. So it's a very embarrassing situation for this former federal prosecutor, Doug McCulloch. So what he's been doing is he's been trying to exaggerate his success with Frazier Glenn Miller, claiming that he got a number of convictions, when in fact he got no convictions on Frazier Glenn Miller's testimony. He claims he got a contempt of court conviction, but that would not have depended on Miller's testimony. I mean, if you do contempt of court, it doesn't require a third party to say, yes, so he definitely did. But, that's what's been going on. And so McCulloch's lies or misrepresentations have been the claim that he got a lot of convictions based on Miller's testimony, and also the claim that Miller was only facing 12 years or so prison. He was facing spending the rest of his life in prison, and that was the situation under which he made that Fallopian bargain of agreeing to testify. Now, this is an area of moral ambiguity here. Frazier Glenn Miller got himself into this situation by flying off the handle and declaring war on the government, which he should not have done. He should have kept a cool head. But on the other hand, he was under tremendous pressure in 1986-87, and he snapped, right? He should not have snapped, but he was under a lot of pressure, and he snapped, and he got himself in a lot of trouble, managed to get himself out of that trouble in a very inelegant way by stepping on other people's toes, but without any long-term harm. So, I have to say he's a very wily, slippery character.
Now, on your website, Setting the Record Straight, you've written about all of this, and you have said some things what were some of these things that you said? What about this this worse story about the black transvestite? Do you not want to talk about it? Do you think that's not important anymore, or?
It is important because we've done Now, McCulloch said that one of their goals, I mentioned this, was to remove Miller as a leader. They wanted to remove him as a leader.
And now, when was this taking? Now, let's get this clear. You know, it's easy to get confused. Well, it is for me about these years in the 70s and the 80s. Now, Glenn Miller didn't really get going until the 1980s. And did all this that you're talking about take place after the business with the Order?
It was contemporary.
Okay.
Yeah, Fraser Glenn Miller started, he had been with the National Socialist Party of America 1976 through 1980,
mm-hmm.
Under Harold Covington
right.
at that time. And in December 1980, he started his own organization, originally called the Carolina Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. Then, as it banded beyond the Carolinas, he changed it to the Confederate Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, and finally he changed the name to the White Patriot Party. And
right.
it became really famous as the White Patriot Party. You can see videos on YouTube of him, of one of his parades with the White Patriot Party. It was quite impressive. And they made nationwide news. And the effect of these parades that they could put on was very invigorating for white people. To see this, to see such a display. Now, Fraser Glenn Miller is not the kind of man that I would follow. He's very raucous. He's a redneck, uncouth. But you know, you've got to give a man his due. He was an effective leader, an effective organizer, and effective at inspiring men. He knew how to get people involved in his movement.
And so the government saw him as a threat and wanted to shut him down and get him off the scene.
Yes, they did. And what happened was some of his members of his White Patriot Party, probably still Klan at this time, had harassed a fellow worker. They were prison workers, and they harassed a black co-worker. And Morris Dees with the Southern Poverty Law Center sued for $1 million. That was in 1983,
mm-hmm.
and it was a very long, drawn-out process, and it was a federal civil suit, and in a federal civil suit, there is no public defender. Glenn Miller did all the lawyer work himself with a stack of papers 4 feet high by the time the whole thing was over. And finally, in order to end the thing, now, the way Miller had interpreted this this suit was that Dees was on a fishing expedition trying to get as many witnesses as possible on the stand, hoping to find out something, some crime.
A fishing expedition.
That's right. That
yeah,
was so, Miller.
Sometimes you're cut off a little bit. There's a little bit of choppiness.
Okay. Well, that was Miller's understanding of what Dees was trying to accomplish. And finally, I don't remember how long it went on, but for quite a long time, finally, Dees offered Miller an agreement that would end the suit, which this is called a consent decree. And Miller thought that this was Morris Dees, in effect, trying to find a way to back out gracefully, declare victory, and go home. And so he signed this consent decree. That was a serious mistake, because what happened was 3 years later, an incident was drummed up that made it appear that Miller had violated the consent decree. They had a man in prison who testified. Now, the important thing in the consent decree is that Miller was not to operate an illegal paramilitary organization, which means that he was not to operate a paramilitary organization with the purpose of or intention of disturbing the peace or overthrowing the government or anything like that. That was the key thing about it. And what happened was they found a guy in prison who was willing to claim, actually two guys in prison who were willing to claim that Miller had been obtaining illegal weapons and implanting to overthrow the government. One of those guys was not very edible. The other guy lied convincingly. And somebody that I know who was at this trial says that it really was, as Miller says, a kangaroo court. It was over in just a few days. They had an FBI agent who testified at this thing that Glenn Miller was a member of the Order and that the Order was trying to overthrow the government and that the Turner Diaries were the blueprint for overthrowing the government. It was really far-out stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But as a matter of fact, there's a connection there to the War on Terror propaganda that we've heard, which is also far-out stuff, which is that the chief of staff for Ed Meese in the Justice Department was a neocon Jew named Mark Levin, who's now a talk show host. So this is the kind of craziness that was going on with neocon Jews under the Reagan administration. Same kind of stuff, Islamofascist terrorists, you know, want to blow you up, and same thing. They had this crazy conspiracy theory about the monolithic racist conspiracy to overthrow the government, which ended up culminating in the Fort Smith sedition trial in 1988, where 13 people were put on trial, charged with sedition, and all were acquitted. Mm-hmm. All were acquitted. If they'd gotten convictions there, there would have been more people put on trial. But it didn't happen.
Yeah.
They had an honest judge there. But anyway, back to what happened with Morris Dees. In this kangaroo case from 1986, the federal prosecutor, Mr. Curran, Sam Curran, allowed Morris Dees to act as a special prosecutor for the government.
Yeah, that was terrible. That's wrong.
Yeah, wow. If his reputation had been then what it is now, wow. But what happened was the jury was overawed with the FBI agent's testimony, and they didn't see through the lying of this convict that wanted to get out of prison and was willing to say anything. And Miller got sentenced to a year in prison for violating the consent decree, which was it was going to be actually 6 months. But Miller, the way this trial had gone, and with the paranoid atmosphere of the time because of the order, right? They had visited him in 2004, late 2004, and given him $200,000. And Bruce Pierce had revealed that fact when he was captured. And this had brought a lot of scrutiny onto Miller, and Miller was panicking. And this was part of what was brought in, or it influenced this trial over the misdemeanor of violating the consent decree. And Miller felt that the walls were closing in on him, and he panicked.
Right, he did. He didn't behave too well after that. But now you have talked about his weaknesses, and that men have weaknesses, and white men have weaknesses, and we seem to want to think that some white men have no weaknesses. They're some kind of paragons of virtue, and others are just pieces of you know what, have no positive values whatsoever. And this is a real fault that we have. We cannot look at things in a clear, constructive way like you do, or in a neutral way, in an objective way. Hattie.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, one of the most vociferous critics of Fraser Glenn Miller, of course, is Harold Covington.
Okay.
But Harold Covington was never able to accomplish anything the way Fraser Glenn Miller was. There's even a letter that Covington wrote in 1986 saying that Miller had succeeded where he had failed.
Yes, right? I read that on your site.
Yeah, that's on my blog, all right. You know, Miller had weaknesses. He had a drinking problem, all right? He would flip out, it seems to me, you know, kind of flip out under pressure. He did that a couple of times. He signed that consent decree to escape from, you know, the hardship of his civil trial with Morris Dees. And then when he felt the walls closing in on him in 1987, he declared war on the government, flipped out pressure.
I never did understand that. I read about it, you know, in his book. I read that part of the book. where he was writing about that. And you just, there's just no way to justify, there's no way to say that there's any intelligence behind what he did. I mean, he must have been just drinking the whole time. They were drinking, he and his buddies there in that trailer or whatever.
He definitely had that fault of being an alcoholic and not always making rational decisions.
Right.
But and, at the same time, the people that want to attack him, you know, what have they done?
Right. And there's an awful lot of alcoholism among all kinds of white people. I was just talking about white people now. I think that's one of our greatest failings and greatest weaknesses and greatest problems is alcohol consumption and what it does. That's my opinion. I think it's worse than drugs. More people drink than do drugs.
Yeah, it seems to me that alcoholism is a contributing factor toward some of these impulsive crimes, like this Wade Michael Pace, I guess his name was, a couple of years ago, that shot up the Sikh temple. He had a drinking problem. I think that would be a very common thing that you would find in these kinds of cases.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the alcohol per se, but the whole personality syndrome.
Well, right, and there's men who drink. They probably don't consider themselves alcoholics, but I would. But they drink at night, and they're on the internet, and you can tell when you can't always tell, but you know, sometimes they just get carried away because they've been drinking, and they write all kinds of stuff, and they get belligerent, get this and that. I get belligerent without drinking, but I do not drink, but. I've learned this about some of these guys. Then they'd say to me, they'd attack me, and then they'd say later, I'm sorry, I apologize, I was drinking too much. I thought, you're drinking? You're writing this stuff and you're drinking. Great, you know? That's real smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
You can't really build a movement on alcoholics.
No.
So anyway, I think we should move along to the transvestite accusation.
Right.
Now, that's the really sensational accusation. I believe that this was put out originally by the federal prosecutors back in 1988 or thereabouts as part of the intention, which Doug McCulloch has stated, of removing and poisoning any possibility of Glenn Miller as a leader. As a leader, you know, returning back to his former milieu and leading people, his constituency was rednecks. The worst thing that you can tell rednecks is that somebody is a faggot. So that's the rumor that they put out. They put out this rumor that Frazier Glenn Miller was a faggot, and I believe that's where it came from and what the purpose of it was, because there is no document that said, well. If I recall correctly, Kirk Lyons says on his Southern Legal Resource Center page, he has an article about this. He says that he heard it from the prosecutors, that's where he got it. And other people heard it secondhand from police. This is Richard Cohen, of the president now of the Southern Poverty Law Center, says that he heard it from State Bureau of Investigation officers from Virginia. It's all secondhand stuff, but it started somewhere, and I think the prosecutors had a clear motive for putting this out because they wanted to remove Glenn Miller as a leader. And that's the kind of rumor that you would have seen circulated in under COINTELPRO in the 1960s, although this was not done in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's what they did. And also the claim that a lot of people were put in prison on his testimony is another way of destroying his potential as a leader, destroying the possibility of his returning and accomplishing anything. I've seen what alleged to be letters from members of the order claiming that people were put in prison on his testimony. I have to either question the authenticity of those letters or wonder how these guys are so misinformed. I mean, they're in prison. They could be misinformed, I suppose. I mean, I hate anything bad about them, but, you know, if they really are saying that people were went to prison on Fraser Glenn Miller's testimony, they are mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm glad to hear you say that. I mean, you're saying that very categorically, because all kinds of people say, oh, that's not true. They did this, and he said this and that. But they don't really ever know. You know, it's just terrible talking about, well, Don was talking about the judges in the court system lying. God, just talking about people lying. People lie just like nothing, you know. They lie just as well as not as tell the truth about anything. All kinds of people.
Yep. Yeah, they do. A lot of people don't really care about facts.
In this
Glenn Miller case, the biggest problem that I have from people is that they really don't care about the details, about whether the details are true or false. Once they've arrived at their conclusion that Glenn Miller is not a good guy, they don't want to hear anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell them that some of what they believe about him is false and some of the rest of it might be true. They don't want to hear that. It makes their head hurt, I think. You know, to me, this is not about whether Glenn Miller is a good man or a bad man. It's about the fact that some lies have been told about him. And the government and the press should not be lying. You know, they should not be lying about the devil himself. All right? You know, there's an old saying, give the devil his due. Well, I think Fraser Glenn Miller deserves the truth, just as anybody. We deserve the truth. We deserve not to be lied to. And by standing up for the truth on behalf of other people who seem indefensible, we protect ourselves against being lied about, I think.
Well, that's right. So I was going to say, but before I say that, let me just say that I've checked my email, and dear Frederick Tobin did try to call the show, but he says a voice says the number cannot be reached. Well, I think that's an operator person. I don't know why the number cannot be reached, but he's calling from Australia. But nobody else has let me know that they've tried to call, and I do wish someone would try, someone from the United States, say, would try to call the number, and I'll give it one more time. Sorry, Hadding, if I'm interfering with your talk
okay.
here. 323-642-1206. So just so we can, I can check and see if this thing is. If it's not, I'm going to really deal with this problem of the calls. So I was going to ask. Should we be supporting Glenn Miller? I mean, like you say, people who never did like him before this happened, they hated him and said he was an agent and this and that because of his testifying. And yet you point out that the government wanted to get rid of him because he was an effective white nationalist. I know you're not going to tell people what they should think about him. But really, you know, what should be the position, or what would be a fair position? I think a fair position myself should be that people should not, what do we call that when you leave somebody hanging in the wind, you know? I mean, you don't, because he, the people who previously were friends with him or supported him should continue to do so. That's what I think. And you're doing that, and a few other people are doing that, particularly since you brought all the facts out.
I just can't stand to see lying going on a massive scale. You know, there have been other situations where I got involved just because I was bothered by the fact that there was lying going on. The surest way to get me on somebody's side is to lie about that person. If I know that there's lies being told against somebody, I will stand up for that person, at least to the extent that that person is being lied about. That just rankles me, and I'm not gonna let stuff like that get past me.
Yeah,
right?
You have done that. You do that. Okay.
I'll even stand up for the Jews if I think people are lying about them.
Yes, you do.
But which bothers you. But anyway, so what happened was this story that had the black transvestite prostitute claim in it, in news media, you know, which was an old rumor that apparently had been put out in 1988 or thereabouts. It appeared on the website of WTVD Channel 11 in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it seemed to rely on this former federal prosecutor, Doug McCulloch, as its source. But what struck me about the article is that all of the specific claims that McCulloch made that were quoted in the story were misleading. He claimed that he got a number of convictions with Fraser Glenn Miller's cooperation, which was false. He claims he got one contempt of court conviction, which is really stretching the truth if you call that a number of convictions with Fraser Glenn Miller's help. And he also claimed that Miller was facing only 14 years in prison instead of spending the rest of his life in prison. So he was really distorting things. And his motive was, as I said, to cover his derriere. Because some people are saying, well, the federal prosecutors are to blame for this incident. Now, it's implied that McCulloch is also the source for the black transvestite prostitute story. Because there's a statement there that Miller was caught in a sex act by Raleigh police with a black transvestite prostitute, caught in the act, it says, in that story on WTVD's website. And this is in the context of quoting Doug McCulloch. And McCulloch makes comments that are consistent with that. He says, well, the facts speak for themselves, and it's very shocking. And it's salacious, right? Mm-hmm. He's going along with this story. Now, later, after I wrote something about this, Jim Giles interviewed Doug McCulloch, and McCulloch said he never said that Fraser Glenn Miller was caught by Raleigh police in a sex act with a black male prostitute. He says that he didn't say that. And you can hear him saying that he never said that. So what has happened, apparently, is that this reporter for WTVD, Steve Daniels, somewhere got the idea that Fraser Glenn Miller had been caught in a sex act with a black male prostitute, and he talked about it to Doug McCulloch, and Doug McCulloch, being a typical spineless Southern politician, instead of correcting him, made a bunch of comments that were along the lines of what he thought Daniels wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Thereby being quoted in that context, thereby lending credibility to a false story, which is nothing more than a rumor. I wrote to Steve Daniels twice. The second time he responded by referring to the website of the Southern Poverty Law Center and the fact that last year Glenn Miller had been spoken to about this by Heidi Beirich and had said that there was an incident, but his intentions were to beat up the queer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is not the story that has been put out by WTVD 11, all right? This was what this TV reporter calls a confirmation of his claim that Miller was caught in the act, the fact that Miller said he was going to beat up a queer.
Right. Right. Terrible.
Yeah, this is really ridiculously bad journalism. And they ought at least to correct it, but they won't. Every news site...
Okay. Guess what? Oops, what? A call appeared, but it disappeared. A call appeared, and as soon as I put my marker over there, it disappeared. Well, anyway, that's something. Go ahead, Hanning.
Yeah, sorry. And there is no documentation that any incident like that ever occurred. The spokesman for the Raleigh Police Department, Jim Shugrew, says that they could find no documentation of any such incident. Initially, he said he simply said that they couldn't find it after looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, he started seemingly making excuses for why maybe they wouldn't have it, you know, stuff like this. But initially, he just said that they couldn't find it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Since Fraser Glenn Miller was quite famous at the time, that's not something that would have been misplaced. All right. ABC News, when they published published their version of WTVD's story, they included the detail that they could find no public record of the incident, but still presented it as fact.
Right.
So you've got no documentation that this ever happened. You've got former federal prosecutor Doug McCulloch and Fraser Glenn Miller himself saying he was not caught in a sex act with a black male prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
And the news media won't correct it.
Yep, that's typical.
Not only that, but they're suppressing any correction. They're trying to suppress any correction. After I got no satisfaction from contacting the reporter, Steve Daniels, after I got no satisfaction from contacting the news director and then the general manager of WTVD, you know what they did? 4 days after I contacted the general manager of WTVD, they removed all comments from their website. There were lots of skeptical comments about the story, people saying things like, why is this only becoming a story now if this really happened? There were a lot of comments like that from people in North Carolina.
Yes, and you know what? And now there's a caller on the line, so let's see if he can talk to us. Hi, caller.
Hey.
All right. What is your name and where are you calling from?
This is Abraham Goldstein.
Well, this is Don. Don, well, your call came through. Don from California. All right.
Yeah, I hung on there. I thought I'd give your number a try, and it seems to work for me, the 323-642-1206 number.
This is the first time I've gotten a call that stayed on here. So, well, hold on there a minute, and let me say something to you can just kind of join in this conversation with us. Because I was saying that, you know, I had mentioned that we should be people who supported or liked Glenn before should support him, and then I was thinking, well, maybe that's not the right word to support him because, he did go out and commit murder for some odd moment. But what you're doing is what's ideal. You're just commendable, Hattie. What you've been actually searching into this, calling people, writing to these prosecutors, and writing to Jim Giles, and writing comments and so on. Doing a lot of work. I really commend you for that.
Well, I think what we need to support is the truth.
Okay.
Whether you like Glenn Miller or not, we should all be opposed to lying about him.
Well, that's right. There's a whole lot of people who love lying about him. And I can name some of them, but I guess I won't. But we know they're out there talking about him, and they love the worst things they can say they will say because they didn't like him before.
What does Abraham have to say?
Abraham? Or what do I have to say? I don't think the issue is so much whether he was an informant or whether he had sex with a transvestite, but whether he killed three people. And if he murdered three people, it doesn't much matter about all the other mud that is slung at him.
It does, too,
it's no excuse.
It does,
no,
too,
it doesn't
matter.
What am I supposed to do? Go, carry water for this guy?
Did I say that? But I think you shouldn't say that it doesn't matter if somebody's lying. That's what they say about Hitler. You know, I got to bring this up. I mean, they say, and they all
well,
kinds of people
quite the
believe
same thing.
It is. They say, well, it's worse. He killed the 6 million people, innocent people. Now, this is same thing that people believe. They'll say it doesn't matter if people lie about Hitler today. Why defend him? It doesn't matter because he's so bad.
Who cares about Glenn Miller? Who cares about
well,
Glenn
maybe
Miller?
People
no,
who
nobody
know
heard of
care.
Him before a month ago,
well,
and nobody cares
yeah,
about him now.
Well, see, there's the attitude that you get, Hattie.
Yeah, well, see, Don is not looking at the bigger issue, which is the fact that the mass media have been caught in a big lie here.
And
I don't know why.
How many people care about they lied about Glenn Miller? 25 people?
Well, let's get to
this
issue.
Who do you know
here?
Besides yourself and 10 other people who care that they lied about
Don.
Glenn Miller?
All right. But let's from the very few minutes we've got, well, actually, we can go over time. Actually, we don't have to end it on the hour. We can go over 15 minutes or a half hour or something like that. So we might do that. Because the thing I wanted to just say is that what about this action of Glenn Miller's? I mean, What would you say about it, Hattie? Don says he, you know, he's already said what he says about it. Why would he do such a thing? I mean, I can't imagine even Glenn Miller drinking doing such a thing unless he was totally out of his mind.
I don't know. It looks poorly planned to me, or not unplanned. You know, I can imagine that somebody might want to go on a kamikaze mission, but you know, what he did just doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense there. Just shooting random Jews or people that he thought were Jews.
Do you think he drank a whole bunch that night trying to get up his courage?
I would be guessing. I have no idea. I'm not going to speculate about it.
Yeah.
But to me, Glenn Miller himself, the man, is not the issue. The issue is the mass media lying. If they'll lie about him, they'll lie about other people. And I'm appalled that an attorney, Don here, would say, oh, he's so bad, we don't need to sort out the details. I would hate to have Don as a defense attorney because he wouldn't want to defend me against worse charges. I could be charged with murder and only be guilty of armed robbery. And he'd say, well, you're so bad, you don't deserve to be charged only with armed robbery. Go, you know, you're just going to go away for murder, and you deserve it. So, I mean, that seems to be the attitude.
That is strange, Don, for you, but you're not a people attorney. You're a different kind of attorney. But
you know, I'm not Glenn Miller's lawyer, and I don't care. You know, I got a lot of other people are far more deserving of being worried about than Glenn Miller. Where's your sense of priority?
Don, it's not about Glenn Miller. It's about the mass media.
Well, what's it about?
And they've been lying.
Well, you know, like that's some great discovery that we never knew about before.
There are a lot of people that don't suspect the lying in this case. A lot of people, even people in this white nationalist milieu, did not suspect that this story about the black male prostitute was a lie. This is a wake-up call for them to be more skeptical. You know, there are two issues here. One is the lying of the government and the mass media. The other issue is that we need to be more skeptical, right? Glenn Miller is just the sand around which the pearl of this issue is formed, all right? You want focus all your attention on whether Glenn Miller is a good man or a bad man when that's not the important issue. The important issue is lying and people believing lies.
Did he kill three people, or is that something that was made up by the government?
How many people go out there and kill people? And, you know, a whole lot of them get away with it. And, I mean, they even are brought to court and brought to trial, and the judges let them go. Or after a little, you know, short little sentence or a suspended sentence or something. And we know it happens.
Don is sounding like one of these people that doesn't want to hear that no Jews were gassed because he knows that some Jews were shot.
What do you think, Don? Do you believe no Jews were gassed? I mean, do you believe
I'm very skeptical about the gas chamber thing.
You're only skeptical.
Yeah, I mean, World War II is over. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, see, that's everything. It doesn't
matter. I mean, I have only so many. There are only so many hours in the day, and I know that the World War II thing is very important to many people. I am very interested in the history of it. No, I don't believe the gas chamber story, but it's I don't know how do we get from Miller to that, but
I just talked on a show about
how justices on the Supreme Court lie, and how the government and the media have lied to us for 150 years. You know, it's just like I'm trying to figure out the riddle of why the white race is being exterminated, and you know, the issue of Glenn Miller, who got drunk and shot three people,
is not that high a priority.
How many hours in the day, you know, are there? There are not enough hours in the day, and this guy is not a high priority for me. I mean,
get it into your head. This is about lying and people believing lies.
Well, we already know that. All right. I don't know a single person who believes the government tells the truth about anything.
They believe a lot of what they're told, and they believe more than they should. That's the point.
There's this idea.
I don't think any of the people who listen to this show believe it.
There's this idea that we intelligent people don't believe. We know the government never tells the truth, and yet these same people believe all kinds of things the government says. And it's just not, the whole thing is, people aren't as good and as wonderful as they're made out to be. And what if Glenn Miller hasn't been put on trial yet? What if it turned out that there was some other explanation for what happened? I don't know.
He's innocent. He didn't do it.
Yeah, I'm not saying I think that, but I'm saying we don't know. You're judging him before he's gone to trial. Is there some kind of?
Well,
I mean.
Don't
you think we should, let that process...
Wait till all the facts are in?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, I don't know, I guess so. I really don't care that much about Glenn Miller,
Well, it's too bad you're listening to the show then. You just waited an hour.
Oh, no, you're a good guy, Don. But you called in because you wanted... And I appreciate it. I appreciate it because it's working very well.
Good.
Okay.
All right, well, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, thanks, Don. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I really do appreciate that he called, and so I tested that out. Good for him. And then you never know what you're going to hear from people. I didn't really expect him to say it quite that way, although that's what the attitude most people have.
Well, a lot of people, it's just that a lot of people, I said this before he called, that with a lot of people, the biggest problem that you get is once they've made up their mind that Frazier Glenn Miller is a bad guy, they don't care about details. They don't want to hear that some of what they believe about him is not true.
And then people also have this idea that, they don't want to be in any way seen to be for somebody who killed people. Like, I'm going to get a lot of flack, probably, from saying that, with some of the things I've said, I've been too positive about Glenn on this show, and I'm going to really get it. I know I am from some of these people who think they've really got something they can hit me with now. Oh, I'm just a big supporter of that filthy murderer, Glenn Miller. I don't know. I guess...
We live in a country where the government are murderers.
That's right. That's right.
So, how does Frazier Glenn Miller compare to that?
That's right. And look at all the people that are murdered all the time, just even through the medical system. And these people know what they're doing to people. They know they're not giving. They know look at all the people who are murdered by chemotherapy treatments and so on. I mean, it's a staggering. And so, but yet people will get all out of shape over somebody... because somebody killed three people. Well, I know if I was a relative of those people, I would think totally differently. I mean, it's the world is a, Hitler said it, the world is a like a jungle or something, and you just have to find your way through it and stick with your own kind of people. And I guess it's just a matter of learning that these lies have been told. I'm happy to learn that. I'm really pleased with the work you've done, Hattie, because I thought it was so awful to think that Glenn was having sex with a black transvestite.
Well, you see, it affects a lot more than him because it feeds into a tendency to assume that racists are all doing that kind of stuff.
That's right. That's right. It's against the white movement, and therefore it's against white people.
Yeah, it's in everybody's interest, except the Jews and the traitors, to get the truth out about all these things.
Okay, well, we're off the air, but we're still being recorded, so the show is still going on. Is there anything more you want to bring up? Because we've got, you can do so.
No, there was just one thing I noticed about when I was trying to post information to correct misinformation on major news websites. I've noticed something that a lot of these news sites. I noticed it on theblaze.com, which is Glenn Beck's thing, and also Kansas City Star. They have a very deceptive arrangement there where if you log on with Facebook, I don't know, it probably works the same way with some other things, to post on their site, if they don't like your comment, they will have it set up so that it still looks like your comment was posted, even though you're the only one that can see it. So they're letting you think that you had a voice.
That's a strange thing. Is this all to do with Facebook?
I'm not sure if it's just Facebook. I suspect it's not. But they have that arrangement where they can make it so that you think you got a say on their news story when, in fact, you're the only one that's able to read your comment.
Yeah, and one of your friends tested that out, and then he gave an example of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I posted on Kansas City Star, and he wrote back and said, I can't see any comment there. Or the link wasn't working for him because it was a link that was only supposed to work for me with my Facebook account. I didn't know that.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, that's something that people need to be aware of. There are lots of different ways that the mass media are trying to prevent people from knowing that they're lying, and that's one of them.
Wow, and so, you know, technologically, they get more and more advanced, and we are just at the mercy of it if we follow mass media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess we're done.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to say anymore. I guess I've said enough. So thank you very much, Hattie, for coming on. And I think this has probably been a very interesting program. And no doubt it will stir up quite a bit of talk. Maybe I won't like it very much, but it probably will do so anyway. And maybe it needed to. So, all right, I'm going to hit the outro music, and so good night, everyone. Thanks for listening.